On this episode of Blue 58, the Packers are shuffling their coaching staff, and the tide appears to be turning at least slightly from departures to arrivals. What do we make of the Packers' newest offensive coordinator, and do the Packers have a bit of a Mark Murphy problem? Plus, who cares if Matt LaFleur is a reach?
Blue 58!
Hello and welcome to another episode of Blue 58, the one, the only podcast to thepowersweep.com. I once again am your fearless host, John Meerdink. Charging forward into the news of coaching additions in Green Bay. What an exciting time this is. Lots of interesting stuff going on. Lots of connections to explore between the Packers past and present. And we're all doing it just a week after finding out that Matt LaFleur would be the next head coach of the Green Bay Packers. Things are happening at a little bit unusually slow pace, I would say, in Green Bay. I would have thought by now Matt LaFleur would have more people officially hired than just his offensive coordinator. And I know some of the coaches are going to be holding over. That's fine. He did get Mike Pettine to come back. How much of a role he ultimately had in that decision is a little bit up in the air. We're not really sure. But he has his offensive and defensive coordinators. I thought there would be a little bit more in place by now. We found out almost exactly a week ago as we record this that Matt LaFleur would be taking over as head coach. And since then, it's been relatively slow. I thought we'd hear about some coaching hires by the end of last week. That really wasn't the case. Did some interviews over the weekend, but now things are starting to turn a little bit, but not before a wave of departures in Green Bay. And we'll get to Nathaniel Hackett here in a second, but I want to talk about the departures first and foremost. The most notable guy out the door so far is James Campen, the Packers' offensive line coach, and a good one at that. He's been with the Packers since 2004. He also played in Green Bay from 1989 through 1993. I think it's bad in one sense that Campen is leaving, but I think there's a larger question that we have to explore here. Is it necessarily a bad thing overall that the Packers are losing these coaches? Let's recap very quickly. James Campen is off to Cleveland, a new job there for the first time in quite some time for him. Patrick Graham is rejoining Brian Flores in Miami, leaving Mike Pettine's defensive staff and heading south to hook up with his former co-worker. Joe Witt is out in Green Bay, fired, and Joe Philbin is looking for other work, and he's probably gone. It's important to note, I think, that all of these circumstances are not necessarily the same. Joe Witt's firing may have been an edict from above. You read Jason Wilde in the Wisconsin State Journal, and he seems to have some pretty good sourcing that it was Witt, or somebody other than Matt LaFleur or Mike Pettine, rather, making the decision on Witt. Quote, the Packers officially kept Pettine as defensive coordinator on Friday, and two sources said it was not Pettine's call to part ways with Witt. Citing a source, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reported that the decision on Witt was likely, quote, made by the front office, end quote. Pettine was, while hired by McCarthy, came aboard last year, end quote. James Campen, of course, was under contract through 2019, so he needed permission to interview elsewhere, and Matt LaFleur granted him that. The same for Joe Philbin. He's a little bit different than Campen for reasons that should be obvious, I think. So it's probably not great in some ways that the Packers are losing these coaches, but there is something to be said, I think, for making a clean start too. The last regime obviously had some issues. Even with the good stuff like James Campen and Joe Witt, clearing the deck on all previous perspectives may not be a bad thing. I am a little bit resistant to change, and I could probably do with a little bit more thorough house cleaning on stuff that I deal with on a daily basis. Letting go of stuff is not necessarily bad, and being forced to start from scratch is occasionally a real good thing too. And when you're at the start of a new era, I think it's wise to avoid the sort of, well, we've always done things this way kind of thinking in your coaching staff. So as good as a guy like Campen may have been, and as steady as a guy as Philbin may have been, keeping them on staff may not necessarily be the best thing, especially when you've got guys there like Philbin and Campen who've been in Green Bay for a long time, and now you have to show up and be the new sheriff in town. LaFleur kind of spoke to this a little bit in his intro newser, a quote, well, I guess not LaFleur specifically here, but Mark Murphy said he was talking a little bit about starting fresh and what they were looking for in new coaches, specifically assistant coaches. Murphy said, quote, "I think they wanted somebody that would hold players accountable," speaking of LaFleur. And the other thing that, and Brian can speak to this as well because he was there, the players talked a little bit about how they felt complacency had set in among some players and coaches. So that was something that as we went through this process was kind of in the back of my mind. Is there something that we can do that kind of shakes people up so we don't have that complacency, end quote. So there you have him on starting fresh. You don't want to just get comfortable with this stuff, because when you get comfortable, that's when complacency can set in. Taking away those things that make you comfortable can lead to growth. What's comfortable isn't always good for you. I mean, think about exercising. Exercising can be fun, and it's good for you and all of those things, but it doesn't always feel good. Even if you're doing something you enjoy, you get tired, you get sweaty, you feel gross sometimes, you get sore. Maybe you hurt yourself if you're a little bit on the aging side. That's something I've started to encounter recently. That's loads of fun, isn't it? But on the whole, it's better for you to exercise than to not exercise. Maybe in this situation, this is something that while there are some negative aspects to it, maybe it's not the worst thing in the world to just clean house and start from scratch. The Packers are not going to be starting completely from scratch, but they're a lot closer to starting from scratch than they've been in a long, long time. Some of that effort to inject new blood, though, has begun, and the Packers are maybe moving some other pieces around and definitely bringing in some new pieces from outside the organization. We heard tonight that the Packers will be retaining Jerry Montgomery and Brian Angelicchio. I don't know if it's Licchio or Licchio. The tight ends coach, you know who I'm talking about. Rob Domofsky reporting that. He also says it's not clear what their roles are going to be, but they were the defensive line and tight ends coach last year, respectively. Of course, the Packers today have also added Nathaniel Hackett to be their next offensive coordinator. Let's talk for a second about Mr. Hackett. Interesting guy. The details, 39 years old, only about 8 weeks younger than Matt LaFleur, though if you look at his headshot, you wouldn't be able to guess it. LaFleur, clean lines, sharp features, full head of hair, nice facial hair. Nathaniel Hackett is almost completely the opposite of that. Round, almost completely hairless, just not, if you had to guess his positional background, you'd say offensive line coach probably. He was a tight ends and quarterbacks coach in college, did some of that work with Syracuse, coached the quarterbacks with the Jacksonville Jaguars briefly. Most recently, Hackett was the offensive coordinator for the Jacksonville Jaguars, held that position from 2016 through midway through last season. Got fired last year, of course, but you always wonder how much of that can be his fault. I guess it's kind of the Adam Gase situation. Yeah, he didn't do super great, but he didn't have all that much to work with in terms of quarterbacks. I mean, Adam Gase was working with Ryan Tannehill and Jay Cutler. Hackett was working with Blake Bortles, and the Blake Bortles experience is something else. Nathaniel Hackett is the son of Phil Hackett, who is a mentor of sorts to Mike McCarthy, and you could view Hackett's hiring as a bit of a marrying of two branches of the West Coast offensive coaching tree. You've got the Mike Shanahan branch in Matt LaFleur and the Bill Walsh-inspired branch in Hackett. I think he's kind of an interesting counterpoint to LaFleur as well. Now, LaFleur is externally very calm, but he has a reputation of being a little bit stronger behind the scenes, maybe a firebrand, if you want to use that sort of terminology. But Hackett, Nathaniel Hackett wears his heart on his sleeve. Great quote from Michael Cohen of The Athletic on Twitter tonight. He worked with Hackett, well, not worked with him, but from the media perspective, worked with Hackett, covered him when he was in college at Syracuse. Hackett was a coach at Syracuse for 3 years, from 2010 through 2012. He was their quarterbacks and tight ends coach and then their offensive coordinator for the last 2 years. Cohen says he was quite an interesting guy. Quote, I covered Nathaniel Hackett in college when he was the OC at Syracuse under Doug Marrone. In addition to strong football acumen, Hackett brings tons of energy. He was so emotional during post-game interviews, both happy and sad, that the sports information directors asked him to cut back on profanity. And he gives an example. As an example, from 6 years ago when Syracuse found success with a new goal line package, quote, from Hackett, I went effing crazy when Adonis scored. I was so fired up. I mean, if there's a guy who's getting that jacked up about goal line packages, I think that's a worthwhile addition to your staff. And I think if there's a blanket criticism of the Packers staff of the past couple of years, it's a lack of fire. It doesn't seem like there's a lot of guys who are really jazzed up ever. I mean, Mike McCarthy could get angry from time to time, but the energy level seemed to be a little bit lacking. It's not necessarily saying that you have to have a ton of energy or be this high energy, you know, rah-rah college type guy, but it's a nice change of pace. I'll say that. The last thing I want to talk about at length tonight, well, last of a couple things, is Mark Murphy. Let's talk for a second about Mark Murphy. The coaching search is at an end. Mark Murphy led the coaching search with some help from Brian Gutekunst, but Murphy was doing the, at least, figurehead leadership stuff. They found their guy. They hired him. And then Mark Murphy talked a whole lot about finding that guy. What should have happened next? Well, Mark Murphy should have taken that opportunity to say, okay, we've had a rough year and a half or so, but we've got a new GM, a new head coach. I've knocked down the silos, and now I'm going back to the business side, and we're going to make sure this never happens again. Tom Silverstein lays this out pretty perfectly in his article for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel from this past weekend, and I'm going to read you a chunk of it here. Quote, unfortunately for the football side of things, Murphy has decided to maintain a presence and stay in control of the day-to-day operation. He confirmed Wednesday that new coach Matt LaFleur would report to him instead of general manager Brian Gutekunst, guaranteeing that the old Bob Harlan, Ron Wolf structure would remain closeted. If ever there was a time for Murphy to back away and hand the football operations over to Gutekunst, it was right then, after the hiring of LaFleur. Murphy has hired two of the three on the organizational chart's power triangle beneath him. He chose Gutekunst as his general manager after going through a similar search process to replace Ted Thompson last year and has chosen LaFleur. Only director of football operations Russ Ball was inherited. And as a brief aside here from Silverstein, you could even say that Murphy hired him into the role he's in now, or promoted him, or whatever. Continuing. Silverstein says, if you're confident in the people you hired, you put one of them in charge and let them do their job. You put the general manager in charge of the coach, personnel, and football operations and have regular meetings to make sure everything is okay. You address the problems in your organization with your number one in charge and investigate further down the pipeline only if you're not satisfied with the answers. If you want to sit in on the occasional meeting just to see how things are going, you do it. If the team heads in a direction you don't like, then you rely on your leadership evaluations and your personal observations to decide what changes need to be made. End quote. I think Silverstein nails it right there. You should read the entire article. It's worth sorting through. But let's think about Murphy here for a second. Why didn't he decide to step aside? I think it's hard to say, obviously, because he's not going to come right out and say why he didn't decide to do so. The armchair former psychology major in me says that he's kind of afraid to be burned again by those siloed sort of structures between football talent acquisition in the general manager and football coaching. So I get that, but it seems like he's a little bit overcompensating in that fear. And furthermore, what does being involved like this actually get him? Football guy, though he may be, and there is some legit questions about whether or not that characterization, that self-characterization, is accurate from Murphy, how many football guys do you need in a room to say whether a head coach should be fired or not? Isn't that the general manager's entire job description? To handle what's going on with the people who handle the football players and the players themselves? Seems like it, right? So does he not trust Gutekunst? Kind of seems like that could be the case. That's one option. And it would explain why some decisions on coaches seem to have come from on high. But there's also the chance that he does trust Gutekunst, and we're kind of overestimating how much Murphy is really handling things. Consider these quotes from Brian Gutekunst in this week's Monday Morning Quarterback column from Albert Breer. Breer, in something that is completely unusual for Packers fans and their consumption of Packers media, Breer got actual quotes from Brian Gutekunst about how this coaching search went down, and I think these two are instructive. Breer asks, how did Matt's name land on your radar? Here's what Gutekunst said. In personnel, we're taught from the time we're young scouts to always keep an eye out, and it's obviously players, which is our job, but any young coaches, good coaches you see along the way, keep your list, keep your information, talk to different people about them. So Matt's been somebody who's been on my radar for a while, and as we started our process, he was part of that wide net, end quote. Interesting. Breer follows that up by asking, do you remember how his name first came up? Here's what Gutekunst says. Quote, Kyle Shanahan and those guys in Atlanta, we played them a few times and really struggled with them, really struggled with their scheme and how they did things. I always really liked the way they attacked us and the way they called the game. I was impressed with how they went about their offensive stuff. So all those guys that came from that system, you were kind of keeping an eye on, end quote. I don't know if these quotes necessarily mean anything, and I'm not saying they do definitively. But I don't think it's a big stretch to say that Gutekunst was a major driving force behind the LaFleur hire. Gutekunst had clearly been watching him for a while, and he followed the Ron Wolf model of keeping a list of guys you might like to hire someday. So when Gutekunst did have an opportunity to have input on a situation like that, he knew immediately a guy that he wanted to go after. It was Matt LaFleur. They went after him, they got him, and now he's the head coach of the Green Bay Packers. How much was Murphy and how much was Gutekunst, we may never know. I'm hoping it's more Gutekunst than Murphy. And there's a part of me that wants to argue or try to argue that what Murphy is doing is actually smart because it's shielding Gutekunst and shielding LaFleur from criticism over some moves that may happen now or in the future. That's not impossible. Probably not super likely as much as I would like it to be possible. But I think there is some evidence here that you can look at to say that Brian Gutekunst does have a sizable role here, even if he's not the ultimate decider. That power lies with Mark Murphy. I don't think we can completely forget about Brian Gutekunst either. If he's content to let Murphy kind of have the spotlight in moments like that, maybe that's just so much the better. Maybe Gutekunst is happy to handle things in the background and just let everyone else take their time in the spotlight, because as long as the Packers are winning, that means Brian Gutekunst is doing his job well. While I've got you here, I want to talk about the idea of Matt LaFleur being a reach. I've seen a lot of arguments from good and bad sources about whether or not Matt LaFleur was a reach as a hire for the Packers. And I think that is about the dumbest criticism you could have of the Matt LaFleur hire. Do you want to say that he's too young? Okay, fine, I get that. Do you want to say that he's never really had extensive high-level experience in the NFL? I get that too. Do you want to say that you didn't like his playbook in Tennessee, or that he waited too long to move on from trying to center things around Marcus Mariota and he should have gone to Derrick Henry sooner? Fine, that's legit criticism too. But I don't want to hear that Matt LaFleur was a reach, because that implies that there is a correct way to hire head coaches. And you know who knows how to hire head coaches? Nobody. Nobody knows what they're doing in this, because if they knew how to hire a head coach, they wouldn't be doing it in January. You only end up in that situation if you had a bad coach. And how do you end up with a bad coach? You hire a bad coach, okay? It's not like they went to the head coach store and bought one of the factory refurbished models or something that was on clearance sale or something that was obviously broken. That's just not what happened. Nobody really knows how these head coaches are going to operate. And so to call one a reach implies that you know more about how he's going to function as a head coach than anybody else. If you want to say that his scheme isn't going to work in the NFL in 2019, that's a criticism. If you want to say he's just a reach, I'm not sure that is. And I say this as a guy who's been as lukewarm on LaFleur as I think he can be to this point. What even makes Matt LaFleur a reach? Is it that he wasn't a head coach before? Well, let's look at some of the other head coaches who were just hired in the NFL. The Dolphins are reportedly going with Brian Flores. He has not been a head coach before. The Browns are going with Freddie Kitchens. Even last year, not a head coach, not even an interim one. The Broncos are hiring Vic Fangio to be their new head guy. He's been coaching in football since the dawn of time and has never been a head coach. The Cardinals are hiring Cliff Kingsbury to be their new head coach. He has been a head coach before, but not in the NFL. And then you've got the Bengals, who are hiring still wet behind the ears Zach Taylor to be their new head coach. How come none of those guys are reaches? Why is it only LaFleur who gets branded a reach? Sure, there's been other criticisms of these guys around the league, but I've only seen LaFleur called a reach for the Packers. Do you call him a reach because he hasn't necessarily had success elsewhere? Well, Adam Gase was fired from a head coaching job less than 2 months ago, and now he's the head coach of the Jets. And then the only other head coach who was hired was Bruce Arians, who retired less than 2 years ago. Why aren't the Buccaneers getting hammered for having to drag a guy out of retirement? Is it because he got a good year out of Carson Palmer? Well, that's just great. That's fine. But it's not like he's been doing a ton for you lately. What has he done since 2015? The Cardinals weren't setting the world on fire near the end of his tenure there either. It's just a struggle. Everybody is going to struggle here a little bit. All we're doing right now is establishing a narrative, and narratives are what we need to avoid. If you say a guy is a reach now, well, you've already got your stories done whether he succeeds or not. If he wins in Green Bay, you could say, nobody saw this coming. It seemed like a reach at the time. Turned out they actually knew what they were doing. If he turns out to be a loser, well, you just, I told you so. He was a reach. They should have done something else. Not that you could ever prove that anything would have gone differently had they hired somebody else. The only other big name really attached to this Packers job in a substantive way was Josh McDaniels. And how do you know he would have worked out? All the evidence that we have suggests that he would have been a bit iffy as a head coach. The firm evidence, his Denver tenure, his brief stay with the Indianapolis Colts. I mean, if you're going to criticize a guy, at least have an actual reason. Every coach comes with risks, and nobody knows how to do this. All we can do is let it play out and see what happens. We can wait. We can make it until August and September to see if he's going to be a head coach or not. We don't have to say he's a reach right now. If you wanted to use that narrative, at least wait until we've seen some actual football. That's all I've got for you this time. You can find us, as you always do, at Facebook and on Twitter by searching The Power Sweep or by just stopping by thepowersweep.com. Hey, how about that? If you'd like to reach out via email, I would encourage you to do so by emailing us at thepowersweep1959@gmail.com. I'm going to try to do something different when we talk about support. I want to focus on one form of support per episode. This time, I'd like to highlight our work on patreon.com. If you go to patreon.com/thepowersweep and donate $1 a month, that makes a huge difference in our hosting costs for both this podcast and thepowersweep.com. It costs some money to put this stuff together, and if you give us that $1 a month for a year, you take care of 1 month of our hosting costs. You get enough people doing that, this is entirely free and helps us produce more stuff, and eventually gets us towards our long-term goals of being able to do this on a more potentially full-time basis. As always, though, we do just love to hear from you. That's the best form of support that you can give us. Just interact with us, share our articles, comment on our articles, reach out, just tell us what you think. Any feedback you give us helps us make this entire operation better and helps all of us become smarter Packers fans. As I always say, smarter Packers fans are better Packers fans, and better Packers fans are what we all want to be. I've been your host, John Meerdink. We'll see you on the next episode of Blue 58.